It's Father's Day, a day that evokes a variety of emotions. Affection, of course, for many of us. Panic for those who aren't sure which aftershave Dad uses, if he uses any at all. Melancholy for those of us whose fathers have passed away. And for some, resentment toward fathers who fell short in one way or another. For radio producer Joseph Bevilacqua, Father's Day is a time for mixed emotions. He recalls his own father and another man who became his mentor.
My father was a Newark, New Jersey police officer during the race riots there in July of 1967. I remember watching the evening news on television and seeing someone who looked like my dad mercilessly beating a black man with a club until he lay motionless in the gutter, his head crowned by a pool of blood. I was only 8 years old. On those terrifying hot summer nights, I got no comfort from my father when he came home still in his uniform, helmet, and flak jacket, and carrying a club. Even in peaceful times, he lashed out at my mom and me, sometimes physically. It was a routine with him. So were the presents he bought me afterwards out of guilt. A copy of Magical Mystery Tour, which was a gift from the record store owner on his beat. Autographs of the Rolling Stones he got after working their concert, and a 1972 Panasonic portable audio cassette recorder. It was black, with silver trim and white buttons, except for the record button, which was red, and it came with a handheld microphone and a 15-minute audio cassette. On side A was this pre-recorded gem.
On the first part of the journey, I was
I played the song over and over. Sometimes, however, I'd flip to side B, which was blank, and listen to the hiss of the tape rolling past the playback heads. For some reason, I didn't record anything on it right away, but over time, I bought other cassettes and began to record my family in happy moments, almost always me with my mom and sister, never my father, except once. In the summer of 1976, I secretly recorded him in the kitchen cooking hot dogs. My grandmother and I were sitting in the dining room.
I do work. You see that car? I washed both cars yesterday, the inside, the outside. I just waxed that car. I'll probably do the other one this week.
How many cars you got?
Six.
His voice was loud and abrasive, but he sounds happy here. My memories of him, however, are anything but. Christmas was the worst time of the year. My father's mood would sour the closer we got to the holiday. By Christmas Eve, he would find any excuse to fight with my mom, and then explode at us. You people don't deserve Christmas! Christmas should be every day of the year! Then he'd grab the Christmas tree by the top branch and throw it to the floor, smashing the lights and ornaments. My sister and I would be crying as we all drove to my Aunt Helen's Christmas party, where the four of us would somehow pretend that nothing had happened. By the time my dad had bought me my tape recorder, I had moved from a small bedroom downstairs to a large one in the attic. I arranged the room like an apartment and pretended that I didn't know those people who were yelling downstairs. And I watched Warner Brothers cartoons.
I'm trying to make the formula that will change a normal character into a devilish fiend.
When I saw this one, I knew why I hadn't recorded anything on the blank side of that first pre-recorded tape. I had been saving it for something special. I grabbed my recorder, turned it on, flipped the cassette to side B, pressed the red record button, lifted the microphone, and out of my mouth came two characters of my own.
Willoughby! Willoughby, I did it! I've created Atomic Sauerkraut Soda Pop! I did it, Willoughby, I did it!
Boss, what'd you say?
Willoughby, I did it.
Did what, boss?
I made up a story that mirrored my real life about an angry professor annoyed with his cartoon-watching assistant.
I've had it with your cartoon carnival. This TV's going right out the window.
Wait, boss, wait, no, boss. Oh, please, boss, no, boss.
Don't try and stop me, Willoughby.
But wait, boss, no, don't throw it out the window. I'm not finished with it yet, boss, oh, please.
My father broke that first tape recorder, smashed it to the floor in one of his fits. He bought me a new one the next day. This one had two microphone jacks and recorded in stereo, which allowed me to overdub my voices and sound effects. From that point, I filled cassette after cassette with my ad-libbed adventures of Willoughby and the Professor. As I escaped further into my cartoon world, I replaced the violence of Warner Brothers with the gentleness of Hanna-Barbera.
Boo-boo, you go back to the cave and wait for me, whilst I liberate some tourist-type goodies.
Yogi and Boo-boo, Quickdraw and Baba Looey, Snooper and Blabbermouse, all father and son figures who had affection for each other. I wanted to live in that world. So, I wrote a letter to the man who did most of their voices, Dawes Butler. I explained my desire to make animated cartoons and included a full-color drawing of Willoughby and the Professor. A few weeks later, a letter arrived in the mail, but it wasn't the response I wanted to hear. Stay in New Jersey and open up a sign painting shop. Even the most talented artists in Hollywood aren't working. Sorry to be so discouraging. To be anything else would be cruel. I wrote back, "Yeah, I know that already, but this is what I want to do." Well, to my surprise, I received a second letter. "You bounce back well. Okay, let's see what you got. Your possible mentor, Dawes." Your possible mentor? I quickly sent him a 120-minute cassette of Willoughby and the Professor stories and waited patiently. Actually, I bugged the hell out of the poor guy, writing him once a week. 3 months later, a cassette arrived in the mail.
"Well, Joseph, here's old Dawes Butler, your possible mentor. And I listened to the first cassette, which was 120 minutes. Your changes from one voice to another are very good. My main criticism is giving you credit for having a writing talent, a sense of continuity, which is very rare in someone as young as you, a sense of characterization, and your Willoughby and the Professor are very good characters. I would say the thing you want to work for in characters is subtlety."
This man didn't know me from Adam, and yet he devoted an entire 30-minute side of a cassette to me, gave me advice on acting, and even demonstrated how he did his most famous characters.
"Howdy, I am Quickdraw McGraw, the world's fastest gun, and don't you forget it."
"And I am Baba Looey, his sidekicks."
"Quickdraw McGraw is a dope character, just like some of the things you did." "Howdy, I am Quickdraw McGraw, and it's very hard palated, and I am forcing out the articulation. If I was just talking naturally as Dawes Butler, that's the way I'd be doing it."
"Same way with Huckleberry Hound. I did. That's a diphthong. I did."
"Yeah, that's a diphthong. Yogi Bear is a lot of diaphragm, and you get a big feeling of tone control in the chest, because he's a big animal. He's a bear. He got a big sound. Yeah."
"Snagglepuss, the same way. Diaphragmic control."
I studied that tape for weeks, practiced every instruction until I had it memorized. Then, I recorded a tape in response. Dawes sent me a second tape, this time officially dubbing himself my mentor. And that's how it began. A 13-year apprenticeship. Dawes sent me scripts he wrote. I performed them on tape. He critiqued my progress. Compliments were hard-earned. I learned as much about life as acting from his subtle character pieces. When I was 17, I visited him in Beverly Hills, accompanied him on his cartoon recording sessions, and participated in his acting workshop. Of course, I brought along my tape recorder. In one session, Nancy Cartwright, better known now as the voice of Bart Simpson, played my girlfriend, and Dawes played my father.
"You introduced me. He's coming over here. I wonder why it took so long."
"Who? Oh, God. Hi, Dad."
"Dad?
I tried to catch your eye, Paul."
"Dad."
Not only did he play my dad in this 1984 workshop, I stayed in his home each summer for months at a time and got to see firsthand how a real family worked. He was everything I wanted in a father, everything my father wasn't.
"What the? Hey, Professor, I'm big, and you're small."
"It would appear so, Willoughby."
"Boy, I look great."
I still do Willoughby and the Professor, although they're not the same characters they were 30 years ago. And I no longer do them solely for myself in the refuge of my bedroom. Their mishaps are now heard by radio listeners across the country. I've made a career of them, and the many other creative projects to which they've led, thanks to those tape recorders of my father's remorse. But when I think of him, and now hear his voice again, I still don't know whether to be grateful or angry.
Ma, I ain't gonna carry you a while.
You ain't gonna carry me.
You gotta walk
the car.
The airport's too big. You'd never be able to walk all the way.
I won't come down there.
I'll get a wheelchair for you.
For NPR News, I'm Joe Bevilacqua.
New Adventures of Willoughby and the Professor will soon be heard on public radio. You can see and hear Joe Bevilacqua's work at ComedyOrama.com.